Mark 10, Jesus then left that place and went to the region of Judea and across the Jordan. Again, crowds of people came to him, and as was his custom, he taught them. Some Pharisees came and tested him by asking, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? What did Moses command you?" He replied. They said, "Moses permitted a man to write a certificate of divorce and send her away. It was because your hearts were hard that Moses wrote you this law," Jesus replied. "But at the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother, be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So they're no longer two, but one. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate." Well, today we're finishing this sermon series on marriage. And today I'm going to be talking not so much about marriage, but I'm going to be talking about divorce. There is a logic to that, I think, in this and the reading in Mark's Gospel, which we've had being read every session of these sermons. The Pharisees come up to Jesus and they start to ask him, to question him about divorce. And that's the question on their mind, and they're wondering, is this lawful? Is divorce lawful? Now, I just find that really interesting that they even think that's a question. We often have to criticize the Pharisees because they got things really wrong very often. But here they're asking a question that we would never ask. If you said to people today, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? The answer is, of course. Of course it's lawful. 4 times, 5 times, 6 times, divorce, no problem. What do you mean, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? Of course it's lawful for a man to divorce his wife. It's lawful for a wife to divorce her husband. It's a non-question. That question has been established. The answer to that question has been established. We know it's lawful for a man to divorce his wife. We know it's lawful for a wife to divorce his problem. It's her husband. What's the issue here? But clearly, for the Pharisees, it is a real issue. I went online today, last week, to see how I could divorce my wife. It's very easy. Really easy. It's cheap too. It's easy and it's cheap. You can go online, petition for a divorce, pay £300, and within a couple of months, it's all done and dusted. It's easier for me to divorce my wife than it is for my son to get his driver's license. That's much harder. Much more expensive too. And so what does that tell us about our culture? It tells us that our culture thinks that it is less painful for men and women to divorce, and it's less of a threat to society that men and women divorce than it is for young boys to be driving around who don't really know how to drive a car. That is why the one is very hard and expensive, and the other is very cheap and easy. Because our culture is telling us that that divorce is easy and it's cheap because marriage is easy and cheap. That's the assumption, you see. Because if you've got cheap and easy divorce, it tells you something about what our culture thinks about marriage. And our culture thinks that marriage is something that can be easily dispensed with, easily redefined. Just put it to the vote, people hands up, and that's it. It's all done and dusted. So our culture thinks that marriage is something that can be easily trashed, easily changed. But that's not how the Pharisees thought about it. Those people always got it wrong. Here they get it right. They do realize that there is an issue about whether God approves of all this divorce. So they come to Jesus and they say, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? Now, the Pharisees, therefore, think that this is a blood-earnest question, which it is, of course, but they're also using it because they want to trap Jesus. Jesus, we're told, has just gone into Judea, across the Jordan, and in doing so, he's entered the territory of Herod Antipas, where Jesus' cousin, John the Baptist, has just been beheaded. And he was beheaded, you remember, because he had some very rude things to say about the way Herod was treating his brother Philip's wife. And John the Baptist got a bit irritated about that and said, really, you shouldn't be carrying on like that. So Herod has him executed. So now as soon as Jesus crosses over into this territory, and the Pharisees, knowing that this is a blood-earnest, serious question, ask Jesus the question, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? They're trying to trap him. So you can imagine the silence that fell on the crowd. This would have been a deep silence, because what Jesus says here could end up with him being losing his life as well, because it's a big issue. So how does Jesus respond? Well, we know how he responds. He says, okay, well, what did Moses say? Moses was the great nation builder. Moses was the great lawyer. What did Moses say? Now, of course, these Pharisees knew the Pentateuch. The Pentateuch is the first five books of the Bible. The first five books written by Moses, they knew the Pentateuch. They probably memorized the Pentateuch, so they knew it off by heart. So when Jesus says, well, what did Moses say? They say, well, yes, okay, Moses allowed it. Jesus' response to that is, yes, he did. But that's because your hearts were hard. So Moses allowed it because of your hard, hard, unrepentant, stubborn hearts. God, through Moses, allowed divorce. So what's Jesus saying here? Jesus is pointing to something quite profound, I think. What Jesus is saying is, look, sometimes God permits, sometimes God allows things to happen in order to accommodate particular sins in a particular culture, in a particular age. God doesn't approve of it, but he allows it. And if you think about that, the number of things in the Old Testament as well as the New, which seems to suggest that this is an operating principle. For example, polygamy. People often sometimes ask me, well, look, Solomon had he had 700 wives. And does the Bible approve of that? What is that? Well, again, I think it's one of those issues that God tolerates it. Apparently, in Solomon and David and the other Israelite kings, God tolerated polygamy, but from the beginning, it was not so, is what Jesus would say. Another issue that the Bible tolerates, of course, is slavery. People often get very upset that the Bible tolerates this. Now, let's just understand, the Bible doesn't condone slavery. The Bible says, if you've got slaves, and in the Old Testament especially, they've got all these regulations as to how slaves are to be treated. Because of the hardness of your heart, if you're going to enslave people, this is how you're going to treat them. You must treat them well. They've got rights. You understand that, don't you? So what happens is sometimes the Bible takes an issue and just tolerates it. Doesn't necessarily approve of it, just tolerates it. And so here, what Jesus is saying is, just like slavery, just like polygamy, Moses tolerated divorce. But, we've been looking at this, haven't we? In the beginning, it was not so. God made them male and female. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, cleave to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So they're no longer two, but one. What therefore God has joined together, let not man put asunder. What's happening here then? Let's think about this. The Pharisees have come to Jesus. They ask about divorce. Is it lawful? And then Jesus immediately starts saying, well, in the beginning it was not so. He starts talking about a man leaving his secure friendship groups, his secure family, leaving his father and mother, the wife leaving her father and mother, the two coming together, becoming one flesh. And then Jesus says, God did that. God does it. I sometimes say this when we're doing weddings and toff and so on. I say to the bride and groom, do you understand that it is God who's bringing you together here today? It is God who's uniting you. They look a bit startled by that. They didn't quite expect that. They thought they were doing it. I said, no, you think you're doing it. I know you think you've arranged everything and you're in charge of your own life and you chose that man, he chose you. Behind all that, there's God. So God is bringing you together here, and God is uniting you together. So if God is doing this, says Jesus, no man has the right to undo it. That which God has joined together, let not man put asunder. So what's Jesus saying in response to the Pharisees? He's saying, look, please do not work on the assumption that divorce is easy. Don't work on that assumption. If you've got that as a working assumption, please take it out of your mind straight away. Divorce is not something easy. Now, our culture thinks it is. Our culture thinks it's easy. Our culture thinks it is also should be cheap. In fact, our culture goes even further and sometimes says, our culture says, divorce is something to be celebrated just as marriage is. I know this because Emma's getting married. 22nd of June, my eldest daughter's getting married. And you know what you do when you get married. You go to John Lewis and you go to the and very nice man's there. And you talk to him and they open up this list. And on this list, you can put lots of very expensive presents. Well, that you hope that people are going to buy you. And it's a way to celebrate the marriage. Now, if you go to Debenhams in London, they're doing the same for divorce. So you can have a divorce register. And you can go along and, you know, the couple who are divorcing, you can get presents for them. And you can say, here's a vase to celebrate your divorce. Because this is a great thing. Let's celebrate this. It's marvelous. So our culture is saying, look, divorce, I know, let's just think, it's really easy. It's something to be celebrated. Have a party. Have friends around. Celebrate your divorce because divorce is something good. In fact, some people would say divorce can be good for children. Now, what should we say to this? Well, I think we could say, and I want you to hear this. I think we can say that in some situations, divorce may well be the lesser of two evils. Okay? Divorce, in some situations, may be the lesser of two evils. And in some situations, I can see and understand that divorce is the only way out. So let's just register that. But let's not get away from what Jesus is saying here. Because Jesus is saying is, don't kid yourself that divorce is a good thing. Why not? Why isn't divorce a good thing? Well, says Jesus, remember that divorce is the tearing apart of one flesh. We've been saying that, haven't we? We've been saying that in marriage, what happens is that God brings husband and wife together, and he makes husband and wife one flesh. And when God does that, my friends, he does not do a superficial job about it. When God unites a man and a woman in marriage, he doesn't just unite them physically together. He unites them emotionally, psychologically, spiritually. They become one flesh. This is not a lazy carpenter at work here. A lazy carpenter, you know what he does? He just takes two bits of plywood, slaps them together with some glue, and then, you know, that's it. That's what our culture thinks marriage is. Our culture thinks marriage is two pieces of plywood, slap them together, some glue, yeah, done and dust, easy. Can be dispensed of easy as well, just pry it apart. No, says Jesus. Marriage is like God taking two huge, massive, weighty pieces of oak and using a mortise and tenon joint to weld them together. In the previous service, I said mortise and tendon joint, and somebody immediately corrected me. He said, no, it's a mortise and tenon joint. And apparently, those of you guys, you know, it's a really powerful, powerful joint. Apparently, the ships that they used to build in the Middle Ages, you know, for going across the Atlantic, all those pieces of wood are held together by mortise and tenon joints. Not tendon joints, tenon joints. And so when God creates a marriage, he's using weighty pieces of oak, not plywood. He's using a mortise and tenon joint, not super glue, whatever it is, and he's bringing the two together, physically, psychologically, emotionally, spiritually. In fact, the husband becomes the wife. The wife becomes the husband. Now, you're asking me about divorce. Is it possible? In one level, on one level, that unity that God's created can never, ever, ever be undone. On one level. Listen, my friends, go talk to your friends who are divorced. Just go talk to them. This might be 20 years after the event. And it could well be that the divorce partner is still in love with a person they've been divorced from. Still in love. Imagine, can you imagine the anguish of that? It might be that the partner now hates their previous spouse. It's either deep love or deep loathing. It's rarely complete indifference. That's very rare. It can happen, but it's very rare. And the reason why is because God has connected you together in marriage. And so when you are trying to wrench apart this mortise and tenon joint of these two great big pieces of oak, you've got to wrench and pull and tear and twist. And it's not going to be easy. And it's going to be very, very painful. Very painful. Divorce can wrench your heart and wrench your soul in a way that death doesn't. Think about it. If your partner dies, and it's sad, isn't it? It can be devastating. It can be absolutely devastating. But if your partner, spouse, husband or wife dies, that's a clean break because they died. And you can come to terms with it, can understand it. You can get your mind around it. But when it's a divorce, that's a messy, messy, dirty break. What can it bring in its wake? Talk to divorced people. It can bring in its wake a huge sense of failure. A terrible sense of guilt. A terrible sense of abandonment and loneliness. A terrible sense that the future that you planned has gone. Completely devastated. All those dreams and aspirations that you once shared. That you once talked about. That you once dreamt about. All that is gone. And this thing, divorce, can go deep into your soul. Deep into your soul. And it can wrench you away from your friends. How do your friends relate to you now that you're divorced? They were friends of you and your husband, or you and your wife. They were friends of both of you. Now that you're divorced, how do they relate to you now? How about your parents? How about your grandparents? How about the children? How about the wider community? This just goes on and on and on, and it goes down and down and down deep into your soul. Teacher, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? Jesus says, don't do it. Don't do it. In the beginning, it was not so. Now, is that hard? Yeah, probably. I think that is hard. That is really hard. But Jesus says, when I say this, please don't think I'm being unkind. I'm saying no, don't do this, because I'm being kind and merciful. I'm saying no, in the beginning it was not so, because I want to shield you. And I want to protect you and your family and your friends from disintegration. When I say no, in the beginning it was not so, I'm saying that because I want to protect you from night after night after night of crying. When I say no, in the beginning it was not so, I'm saying that because I want to see you to see the blessing that will cascade down the generations and down the years should you stay together. I want you to taste and see the joy of happy, fulfilled, confident children forging happy, fulfilled, and joyous marriages. And when I say no, because in the beginning it was not so, I'm saying no because I'm saying no to death. I'm saying no to pain. I'm saying no to despair. I'm saying no to, and when I'm saying no to divorce, you must understand me and you must hear me as saying, I'm saying yes to marriage. I'm saying yes to life. I'm saying yes to joy. I'm saying yes to fulfillment. I'm saying yes to deep, deep contentment. And I'm saying yes to security and peace in your old age. That's what Jesus said. Now, in a way, I think sometimes people who are divorced, because of the cultural pressure on them, aren't allowed to articulate the pain they're feeling. Because our culture is almost saying, you're not allowed to say that. Because we want to create a culture now where we celebrate divorce rather than hold on to marriage. Now, I know what you're thinking. When you hear Jesus saying that and you hear me saying that, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Nigel, look, you know, you never met my ex-husband. You don't know, my wife, you know, she could kill me with one look. My ex-husband, my ex-wife, I became addicted to drugs because of her. So it's all very well you standing up saying that. It's all very nice. It's all very well for Jesus to say this. He does not understand what I was going through. Now, listen, let me just say, as I said already, I think Jesus also would say in some situations, we're talking about an amputation. That's what divorce is. But he said, because we're talking about the dismembering of a single body. Now, sometimes if you've got diabetes and gangrene sets into the leg and you go to the doctor, he could well say, listen, to save you, I've got to amputate the leg. And that's understandable. But if you went to your doctor and said, look, doctor, I've got a bit of a cold this morning and my nose is a bit sniffly. He said, well, I've got the solution to that. And he sliced off your nose. He'd be run out of town, wouldn't he? He'd be run out of town. And what Jesus is saying here is, look, if you're going to amputate, understand that this is the losing of a limb. This is the losing of a leg and an arm. So Jesus is saying, just bear that in mind. Divorce is not easy. It's not a doctor would never do that to you. If you had a slight infection, just slice off your arm. This is something massive. So let's just bear that in mind. Nothing I want to say, I think, is, listen, just bear in mind, Jesus is telling the truth here. He is speaking the truth. Jesus said, he claimed to be the truth. I am the truth, said Jesus. Now, what is the truth? Well, basically, the truth is not just facts. I mean, the truth is facts, of course. The truth contains facts. But truth isn't just facts. Truth is ultimate reality. Now, you can turn your back on ultimate reality. You can invent other myths. If you don't want the truth, you can, in the place of truth, you've got to invent another myth. You can do that. But at the end of the day, truth is truth. And truth is something that, it's not that you change truth. Truth will change you. Because truth is bigger than you. And so when Jesus says, in the beginning, it was not so, he's telling the truth. He's speaking the truth. Now you've got to, it's hard. You've got to get your minds around it. You've got to say, well, I don't like the truth. I'm going to change it. You can't. It's there. It will destroy you before you change truth. Truth will destroy you. Now, what do you think about people who tell the truth? Do you like people who tell the truth? Have you met people like that? You know, I always call a spade a spade. I always be, oh, no. Really? Do you really do that? Yes. I always speak the truth. What do you think of people who always speak the truth? You're ugly. Okay. Do you have to mention it? I mean, do you have to speak the truth all the time? You should lose weight. I know. Please, enough truth. You know, children at the mealtime, it's burnt. God, it's true. Please don't tell me any more truth. What are people like when they just tell you truth all the time? They're not nice people, are they? And you think about people who tell the truth, they're difficult to get along with. But in a way, some religions do this. Religions just tell you the truth, and it's at least it's clear, isn't it? At least it's easy. It's clear. When you speak the truth, boom, there it is. I've told you the truth. What more do you want? It's clean. It's easy. Islam is a bit like that. Islam says God is one, Allah is one, and Muhammad is his prophet. There it is, truth. Now, that's okay. That's very clear. Thank you. If you disagree with that truth, there's immediate punishment. Off with your head. If you're a Muslim, you deny that, you'll be executed. So here you have the truth, and following the truth comes punishment. And it's all very clear, and it's all very easy, and it's all very nice, and no one actually anguishes very much. But the question still remains. And the question is this: thank you for the truth, but where is love? Where's love in all this? That's a good question too. And sometimes people say, well, if there's a conflict between truth and love, what do you want? Do you want the truth or do you want love? Now, some people say, actually, there's a conflict between truth and love, what I want is the love. Thank you very much. Okay, what does this look like? Like when it's all love. Teacher, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? Of course it is. That's a loving thing to do, isn't it? You want a divorce? I know. Life's tough. It's hard, is it? If you want a divorce, yes, sure. Oh, you're going to be married again. Oh, you're having trouble in your second marriage. Oh, well, I'll be loving again. Divorce again. Sure, no problem. You've married again. You've got problems in your marriage. You want the loving thing to do? Divorce again. Is that loving? Is that the loving thing to do? What about the spouse that wants to remain married? It's not loving for them either. And you see, what you've got is, and you get it in when parents are raising children, either one parent will go towards truth or the other one parent will go towards love. And it's very difficult to keep these two things in tension. I know this because I've had quite a few children. And when Karen and I first got married, we went through a very, very steep learning curve. Actually, I went through the steep learning curve. Karen just sort of, she's like a duck to water. Anyway, I went through this learning curve that went like that. And when it came to raising children, you see, you've got these children and they've done something wrong. So my tendency, as you can imagine, would be go towards truth and punishment. You shouldn't have done that, punishment. Caroline's solution was to go towards love and forgiveness. So I was going to truth and punishment. She was going towards love and forgiveness. And we had lots of arguments about how to raise the children. But, you know, it's very lovely. It's very easy. If you're only going for truth and if you're going for love, shall I tell you what there is in your heart? No anguish. There's no pain in your heart when you're like that. If you either go towards love, or either go towards truth, it's very easy on the person meeting out the punishment. It's very easy also on the person receiving the punishment. Think about this. If you're going towards truth, if you're going towards punishment, you know, the child has done something wrong, and you say, that was wrong, punishment, you're grounded. Finish. The child has done something wrong. Oh, darling, never mind. Forgiveness. Problem dealt with. But both either going towards truth or going towards love, both ignore the pain and the anguish involved. They're trying to minimize the pain and the anguish. Now put the two things together. What happens is, you see, when Karen and I, as we grew together in our marriage, as we grew together raising children, we both mellowed. So Karen and I became stricter and I became more chilled. You see? And do you know what that brought into our lives? More anguish. More pain. Because now when your child does something wrong, you're reaching out to the child in love and forgiveness. At the same time, you've got to exercise discipline. And so what happens to your heart, it goes, yeah! It hurts. It's much easier just to say, you're grounded. It's much easier to say, you're just forgiven. It's a terrible thing to say, you need to be punished and forgiven at one and the same time. That really does a number on you. Now think about who we've got standing in front of us in Mark chapter 10. You've got Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And when you go to the Bible, what you discover is God's heart is always being torn. It's always being torn open. God, throughout the Bible, seems to me in a perpetual state of anguish. When God, we are told in Genesis, saw how great man's wickedness on the earth had become, and that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time, the Lord was grieved that he had made man on the earth, and his heart was filled with pain. Why was God's heart filled with pain? Why didn't he just zap everybody? That would have eased the pain. Why didn't he just say, oh, don't worry about it, it's not a problem. He didn't do that. His heart was grieved. His heart was torn open. And when you've got the Pharisees coming to Jesus, just think who they're talking to. They're talking to the eternal Son of God. And when Jesus came into the world, he endured oceans and mountains of anguish and pain. The Pharisees come saying, is it lawful for a man to divorce? And they said, well, Moses allowed a man to write a certificate of divorce. Oh, says Jesus, yes, I know Moses. Moses was the lawgiver. Moses laid down the law, but standing in front of you today, says Jesus, is not a lawgiver. Standing in front of you today is a bridegroom. And I have come to win a bride. And in my winning of this bride, I am going to be torn in two. I am going to be ripped apart. Because I am going to come, says Jesus, and I'm going to melt your hard hearts. And I'm going to melt your hard hearts by holding out before you the law that's going to frighten you and terrify you. And you're going to think it's all very harsh. But at the same time, I'm also going to open the door to forgiveness. So what you have in me, Jesus Christ says, the perfect bridegroom is I've come to offer you forgiveness. I've come to wash away all your sins. I've come to die for your hardness of heart. I'm going to die for your hardness of heart, and it's going to tear me in two, not because I'm going to say truth doesn't matter. It does matter. And not because I'm going to say I'm not going to love you. I am going to love you. And because of that, I'm going to go to the cross to give you strength and power to live a broken but humble life because you've accepted me, the bridegroom, into your hearts and into your marriages. I've got to finish. I will finish. A few weeks ago, somebody came out to me and said, Nigel, that's all very nice, thank you. But I wasn't a Christian when I got divorced. And I remarried. I'm not sure whether I should have divorced. It was hard, but that's what I did. And now I'm remarried. What should I do now? Jesus says, adultery. What do I do now? And actually, Paul takes up that theme. Well, Jesus mentions it too, but Paul takes it up in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. He says, listen, what was your condition when God called you? When God called you and you became a Christian, what was your condition? He says, were you uncircumcised? Remain uncircumcised. Are you married to an unbelieving husband? Remain in that marriage. Don't leave just because your husband is unbelieving. Remain in the condition to which you were when God called you. Were you a slave? Remain a slave, although if you can be free, by all means, get free. And the principle that Paul is laying down here is when God calls you, he'll call you in a situation. And the calling upon us as Christians then is to remain in that calling in which we were when God called us. Now, Jesus brings us out. Remember how Jesus brings us out. In John chapter 4, there's a woman at the well. Go, call your husband, says Jesus. The woman says, I haven't got a husband. She says, you're right. The man you're living with isn't your husband. In fact, you've had five husbands. It's interesting that Jesus says that. What he's saying is, to the Samaritan woman who divorced, who married, divorced, remarried, divorced, remarried, divorced, what he's saying, every time you stood in front of God and took upon those covenant vows, you created a marriage that was a marriage. That was a marriage in the eyes of God. You took upon yourself those vows. God was there. God brought you together. And you've done that five times. Now, what the principle is that if God calls you and you've been divorced and remarried, now God, now Jesus expects you to remain in that marriage. But with these resources of being united to the bridegroom, Jesus Christ himself, you have all the resources you need to be broken and humbled. And all the resources you need to work at your marriage so that in this marriage you become the best wife and the best husband that you could possibly be. Because you now know that marriage is for life. It was created by God in the beginning. And in the beginning, God created marriage and not divorce. And out of that knowledge now, you can live a fulfilled, happy, joyous life. Amen.